Hi, I'm Vernon Trollinger for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for Kui Nguyen OD, Director of Career Development and Minority Enrichment at the State University of New York in New York City.
Where did you grow up?
Interesting question. Well, the first 8 years of my life, I grew up in Vietnam, actually. So my parents were both born in Vietnam, and I was raised in the South. And I lived there for the first 8 years, and then we got to go to California after that because... the Vietnam War and, you know, my family's involvement in it. And so my dad, our family became political refugees because my dad fought for the South. And, you know, because of that, the United States decided to sponsor us to come to the United States. And so at 8 years old, I remember very vaguely, but I do remember it was a really early morning. We got in a car and we left and we never came back.
Where in the South were you?
Probably not more than, 30, 40 miles outside of Saigon, or what people call Ho Chi Minh City these days, but it's in the north, the northeast of that, along the coast. So we live in a relatively small town, fishing village, in that area. So not too far from the city, but because the infrastructure there, the roads aren't very good, let's say 10 miles might take, here it might take 10 minutes in the freeway. Might take you an hour there, So the distance isn't far, but it just takes a long time to get there. So, after we came to the States, we had some relatives in San Jose in California. So most people know that sort of like, Silicon Valley type areas. So that's where we settled. And I went to I started third grade when I came, and we stayed in San Jose. I stayed in San Jose until I was 18, and then I moved to Berkeley for college in Northern California, not too far from home, maybe about 50 minutes, 60 minutes. I spent most of the first 18, no, actually the first, from 8 to 22, I was in California. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I moved to New York.
Why New York?
Yeah, so
you went cross country to go to New York, and that's that.
I know. Why the heck did I do that? Right?
Yeah.
Being an Asian person and having parents that expected a lot of me, they always wanted me to go to an Ivy League school or one of those brand name schools because that was really important to them. In their eyes, that was a sign of success. And so when I had gone initially to Berkeley, Berkeley is most of the time they're considered the number one public university in the world. So when I got in, they were really excited. And actually, when I was at Berkeley, I applied at three different optometry schools. There were two in California and one in New York. And actually, New York was my last choice. It was my third choice. And when I had gotten into all three schools, that's when really the dilemma started to come, because I was like, okay, I thought, that I was going to stay in California school. But then the draw of living in New York and kind of getting away from everything and giving myself a chance to kind of grow up and take care of myself, that was really, really appealing. At the time, New York, even though students who are living out of state, they have to pay out of state tuition in New York for the first year of school. And that was a lot of money. And, I actually received a scholarship as well from Berkeley. And so, that's my number one choice for optometry school. But it would have meant that I would have stayed there for four more years. And being the young, curious man that I was, I said, well, it's either staying here at Berkeley for four more years, paying less for school, being around family and having all that comfort, or just taking a really big chance here and move all the way to the other side of the East Coast and experience something new. And, at the end of the day, it's really funny because that last day at 5 o'clock was when I had to submit my decisions. And I had declined Berkeley on that day, and then right after that I had remorse right away, and I thought I would call the office, and I called them to see if I could change my mind, and the office actually closed, and I could never change my decision after that. But in retrospect, I'm very, very happy to be here and having gone to New York. So it's been over 7 years now that I've been in New York, so it's been really good.
But you seem to have adapted well to the culture shock of coming from Vietnam to California, then from California to New York.
Yeah, it's remarkable, right? I think, when I studied about the eyes, I was just really fascinated about how resilient the eye is, the sort of, stuff that can get in your eye, or you can have infections and you can have problems with it, but it's always bounced back pretty strong, and I think human beings are sort of the same way. I think if we're really forced to adapt, I think we do a remarkable job at doing that. And especially, I think if you're young enough and you move to somewhere new, I think you adapt much better also as a kid, because I think you're just having a good time and just kind of learning about the world and just being curious about everything. I think it goes by a lot faster and you adopt a lot quicker than you think. You know, when I was younger, I always wanted to speak English as well as I could, because that was one sign that, hey, I've assimilated somewhat. And I worked really hard on that. But I think just watching cartoons and playing with kids, you know, playing sports and just socializing, I think naturally it helps a lot anyway. And you get a lot better at it without realizing it, you know. Just like how moving to Vietnam to California was a big deal, I think moving from California to New York was also a really big change as well. And I think, fortunately, I've been able to adapt both times. So it's been very rewarding.
So how did you get immersed in optometry then?
Again, you know, maybe this is another Asian thing, but, you know, you know, at the dinner tables when I was growing up, you know, they always talked about, you know, like Asian parents, they love to talk about their kids. Well, maybe other parents too, but just, I'm speaking from personal experience. My parents were always talking about how they wanted their kids to be doctors, or, you know, or they, my uncles would come by and they would talk about how successful their kids are, you know, being an engineer or a lawyer. And, you know, you sort of, even if your parents don't force you to do those things, I think just hearing it kind of, you sort of, it affects you. And, you know, and also I volunteered quite a bit when I was in high school, because I was an overachiever and I wanted to have all this nice stuff on my resume to apply to college. And naturally, you know, we would volunteer at soup kitchens and at the hospital. And I really liked just helping people, you know, and I thought being in healthcare would be something that I wanted to do. And so that was sort of my mindset going to college, was, hey, let me try and just get used to college, do a good job in my classes, explore some of the health professions and see which one, you know, I like the most. Actually, it wasn't until my senior year, actually, that I really gotten to really turn on my grades around, and I started doing better. And that's when I started to say, hey, maybe this is the time to start looking at careers and see what you really want to do. You know, at Berkeley, you know, it's a very, very, very competitive school. And it just seems like every other student was, at least in me, because I studied biology, it seemed like every other student was studying to be a doctor of some sort. You know, like medical school was really what everyone was talking about. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, how even these days when something gets on social media and it goes viral, well, it was kind of like that being in school at Berkeley, because everyone was doing that, and so you felt like you had to do the same. But anyway, I did manage to shadow at a couple of doctor's offices. My relationship with medicine is a little bit more intimate, because, you know, I would visit the doctors quite a bit growing up, but I had never visited actually the optometrist, because, you know, my eyesight was good and my parents never took me. It wasn't something that I did. And so it was something that I never thought I would do. So when I was shadowing my senior year, I shadowed at a couple of medical doctor's offices, the dentist's office. And then I happened to shadow at this place called Rock Ridge Optometry, which was a really, really great practice. And, you know, I sent them an email and says, hey, you know, can I, I'm thinking about, you know, one of the health professions, can I volunteer in your office and shadow you? And they said, yeah. And, you know, what I realized about that experience is that, you know, the doctors there really loved what they did. You know, they get in the morning, they love seeing their patients. It seems like they're not stressed out all the time. You know, one of the doctors in the office, he only worked 3 days a week, and, you know, he would spend so much time with his kids, you know, first day of first grade, whatever it is, softball games. You know, he'd always make sure that he was there for the kids, and I thought that was something that I wanted to do and make it sort of like look like that, because here you're helping your patients, but at the same time you have sort of a really good life, work-life balance, you know, and they seemed really, really happy. And you know, what really sold me was, after I had volunteered there a couple times, they said, hey, you know, since you're going to be taking a year off anyway to consider grad school, why don't you work here? And actually, that's when they offered me a job and I came on full time and I started working there. And I remember right before deciding to go to optometry school, I spoke to one of the optometrists in the office, and you know, I really looked up to him, and he said, hey, you know, just so you know, if you know, if you were my son and I was giving you advice, I would say that optometry is one of the greatest careers there is. And you know, after he said that, he really sold me, you know, and the rest is history pretty much from that point.
How did you get involved with optometrystudents.com?
Well, you probably know Matt Geller because you have interviewed him.
I guess so, yeah.
But yeah. and a lot of people know him because he's very involved these days, but actually, Matt Geller is my roommate in optometry school.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, so we lived together for the 3 years in optometry school. And then My fourth year, we had to go out on externship sites. You know, Matt had this idea of this blog when we were roommates, and naturally he was looking for other students to help him write and create content. And, you know, I wanted to be involved and help Matt get the site started, and so that's how I started writing articles for Matt and helping him in some interviews and just little things here and there whenever needed. And after some time, it got so much traction that Matt got so much help that I think he was fine afterwards. So he's been doing it ever since. So. Okay. Yeah, so... Yeah, that was an easy question.
Well, you helped launch newgradoptometry.com in 2014. How important is newgradoptometry.com for helping new grads transition from student life to professional life?
Yeah, you know, I think it's another great resource to have. You know, I think that the optometry curriculum, even though it's 4 years and a long time, you know, with all the didactic stuff and training you to be a great clinician, I just feel like there's not enough time to learn about all the other aspects of optometry and just careers and life in general. And I think that new grad optometry does help fill that niche somewhat. You know, if you're talking about what's it like in corporate optometry, or how do you negotiate a contract, or what to look for when you're opening a practice. You know, these are all very practical questions that some optometry schools may or may not touch on, but I think Matt tries to fill the void and include in his website, and I think it's a really good resource for students to use if they're curious about any of these things, and I hope they are, because there's just so much to learn. You know, when I was a student, a lot of people always tell me, hey, you know, your education is only going to start when you graduate and you start working, not now. And I think the more that I've worked, the more I realize that's really, really true. So, you know, it's a great place for all those resources, you know, one of the many places.
What do you do for downtime?
You know, I really like sports. You know, I used to be a really shy kid, and I used to like playing basketball a lot at lunch. And one of the coaches in middle school saw me, and he recruited me to play basketball with him on his team, on the eighth grade team. And that really changed my life, because I was such a, you know, I was such a nerd, and nerd wasn't cool back then like it is cool now. So, you know, I got to feel like, you know, I could gain some confidence and be sociable and be less awkward and be less shy. So basketball really helped me that way. And so I played basketball in middle school, high school, and intramurals in college. And so now I keep doing that. So, you know, I play basketball every week. I was on a basketball team here in New York City with a couple friends and some people I met at an open gym. I played basketball on the team for about 5 years now, and so we've taken a break since the last 2 years. But I still play on a weekly basis. It keeps me in good shape. I meet a lot of interesting people being in New York City, people from other sectors, you know, like people like in film and in music. I also like to watch basketball and sports, so I watch a lot of football and I watch a lot of basketball. You know, ever since I started working, I've also been sort of just really trying to work on a lot of my the skills that I think are important for career development. And so, you know, I've since started doing a Toastmasters. It's an organization that lets you work on your public speaking. It's really scary, of course, you know, but I've been getting a little bit better, so that's been good. And, you know, just spending time with friends and family whenever I get a chance. And then when I can take some time for vacation or for work, I love to travel. You know, I try to, travel to a different country every year. And that's a really big accomplishment for me, because I've never left the country since I was 21. And that was the first time I left the country since I came. So I'm really proud to say that I got to travel quite a bit and open my mind up, you know, about the world.
What's something your colleagues don't know about you?
Well, I would say I actually think that most people didn't realize that, you know, I grew up in Vietnam. You know, a lot of people who, when they look at me, they think, hey, you know, he probably was born here, you know, because he seems like he's pretty socially adept and seems to get along with everybody, and you know, but yeah, you know, I grew up on a farm. I had a water buffalo. We had my dad had a rice paddy, and I would help take care of it and take care of the water buffaloes. And we had potatoes and mango trees, and we had a bunch of coconut trees in the front of our house. And you know, that was not the most easy time in my life, but looking back, probably one of the most important parts of my life. So I don't think a lot of people know about that unless they know me really well.
After you graduated, what was your biggest shock when you started working?
I think two things. One is, you know, the real world is so much different than what you're taught in school. You know, I remember my first exam, it took 2 hours, you know, and I had to trim that down to 15 minutes when I worked with the medical doctor's office. You know, so just managing patients and time, I think that it's a lot different than what you're used to as a student. And then the second part of it is really understanding how medical billing works. I'm sure, you know, a lot of the doctors that you talk to talk about this, but, you know, it is really complicated. And so just learning how to do that the right way and do it efficiently so that you're having more time for your patients, you know, because it can take up a lot of your time. I think that was a big shock for me.
Now, you'll be presenting the Essential Money Conversation for Optometry Students at the International Vision Expo. So what is the Essential Money Conversation for Optometry Students?
Well, you know, I'm not a financial expert by any means, but I have read up on a lot of personal finance when I was a student and also when I graduated, because I didn't know anything. I didn't know what an IRA was. I didn't know. I knew that there's a retirement vehicle called a 401k, but, you know, I don't know how that works. I don't know how to I don't know about interest rates and bonds and all this stuff. And what I realized is that, hey, you know, a lot of us spend so much time in school so that we can come out and have promising careers and make a lot of money and take care of ourselves and our families. But really, honestly, I think a lot of us don't really know a lot about money. I think we have continuing education every year for our degrees, but yet we don't have. But a lot of us don't invest time to learn about money. And you know, you have continuing education for optometry, but shouldn't you have continuing education for financial literacy as well? And that's sort of like, you know, what I'm going to try and get across to the students is that, hey, you guys got to start learning about money, start learning how to make it work for you, because you can work so hard on your degree and upkeep of your degree and helping your patients. But if you don't know how to manage your money and pay back your loans and make the money work for you, you know, it's going to be much more stressful on you later on. And so I think the main message that I'm going to try and get across to them is that not so much that I'm going to teach them financial concepts. We will go over some of those important ones, but, you know, just really starting with some resources to learn about money and continue to learn about it, because it's really, really important. If you're a student now and you say money is not important to you, I promise you will change your mind when you graduate.
What's something you'd like to change in the profession as it stands now?
Well, you know, there's a lot of changes that are happening. You know, one of them is, of course, you know, the Affordable Care Act's been in place for a couple of years now. But really, if we can, this is all of healthcare, but I really am hoping that someday we'll see a one-payer healthcare system where maybe the federal government or somebody would just be the single main payer for all the healthcare services. I just think that the way that we have it now, where, you know, if a patient comes into the office and they say, hey, doc, you know, my eye is having so much pain, I can't see out of it. The first question shouldn't be, what insurance do you have? You know, I think the first question should be, or the first thing I should say to them is, hey, you know, come to the chair, let me take a, you know, at you real quick. And I think, you know, I wasn't around 20, 30 years ago, but I think the way that it worked then is that it's a fee for service where you can come into an office and if you had a problem, you can just pay for it, you know, and then your problem's taken care of. It's not as complex as it is now where, you know, the idea of a copay and the idea of, you know, these exemptions you know, all these hidden costs and learning how to bill and code. I think it takes so much time away from the doctors with their patients. And it also makes it complex for the patients as well to figure out, hey, you know, can I afford this treatment or what doctor should I see? And so I really think if we can kind of turn back the time or change our system somehow where we can deal with that insurance problem, I think that would be better for everybody. We're just spending so much time on administrative stuff, Vernon, you know, that it's really taking time away from our patients. Not an easy thing to solve, but one can hope.
Okay, now last question, and we inflict this one on everybody.
Okay.
What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Oh, gosh. this doesn't sound very crazy in retrospect, but for me it was really crazy, and that was deciding to, my family never got to take vacations and leave the state or go travel or take, you know, go to a lot of exotic places. And so for me, even though I grew up in Vietnam, my worldview was really, you know, from 8 to 18 living in California, that was the bubble that I knew. You know, I was comfortable there. I knew what I was like. I knew the people. And I really didn't know much outside of California, and that's really a bubble in itself. And I think what I decided to do was study abroad in Siena, in Italy, my third year in college. And that was really scary for me because it was a lot of money, but it was also the first time that I was going to get on a plane by myself and go to a place where people speak a different language than you. And I know these days there's, you know, everybody's traveling and it's not a big deal. But for me at the time, it was a really big deal. You know, having gotten a chance to do that, that really, really empowered me to do more of that, you know. And so I'm really glad I did it.
So how long were you there?
I was there for a summer, not too long, but I was there for about 3 months. And I got to live in Siena in the Tuscany area. So it was a lot of fun. There's something in Siena called a palio. And what that is every, I believe is every June and every August, they have, it's a horse race. They have what's called a piazza. It's like a town square in the middle. And everybody sort of congregates there after hours or at lunch or at, you know, even really late into the night, people hang out there. But twice a year, it's a tradition that goes back like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, where the town is, split up into different parts. And they have a horse race with each other, and it's a really competitive sort of a tradition where they try to win that horse race. And they pack everybody there in the middle of the town square, and then the track goes around them. Just amazing experience where you have all these people in the middle and all these visitors and tourists and then all the local members packed in the middle for hours, and then they have this horse race that's really impressive, just racing around. And I got to volunteer for the local hospital there, and we, you know, I remember just carrying drunk people out. People were passed out because they've been drinking so much. It was so hot, and then getting to see all this stuff too, just really amazing. I won't ever forget it. But that was one of the memorable moments, and I got to see that in August, so that was really cool.
Quee, it's been great talking to you, and I'm surprised that you've lived that long in New York and you haven't picked up an accent yet.
No, I don't know how that didn't happen, Vernon. All right, well, thanks for the interview. I appreciate your time as well.